and welcome to another episode of the William Branham Historical Research Podcast. I'm your host, John Collins, the author and founder of William Branham Historical Research at william-branham.org, and with me I have my co-host, researcher, minister, and friend, Charles Paisley, the founder of ChristianGospelChurch.org and the author of Come Out of Her, My People. Charles, it's good to be back and to talk all things deliverance ministry. I'll never forget the first time I started just even mentioning deliverance. And because a lot of my website has critical information about some real scoundrels, just the mention of deliverance, you get all of these people that just get up in arms, man. Like, what's he going to say? He's probably going to say something bad about deliverance ministry. And the funny part is, you know, I have seen things that have happened that I just can't explain in the Branham movement. And I realized that some of the things that happened, we were in a movement that, by and large, I can't say was a movement by God. There was so much fiction, so much false teaching, doctrine. Some things were actually anti-biblical. And when I look at that and then combine it with some of the things that are happening, I don't know what to do with that. But whenever I start publishing anything skeptical, when I did start publishing things skeptical of deliverance, it's really funny because some of the things that I'm publishing are undeniably false. Like, there is no question that these guys were using gimmicks and stage tricks in the examples when I published them. But you get all the deliverance people up in arms, like, well, we like this false thing. We like this stage trick. And I look at the whole thing and I equate it to going to watch, you know, a magician on stage. I like the magician. I really do. But the difference is I separate the magician from God, because when I go there, I don't expect that the magician is doing it by the hands of Almighty God. He is tricking me, and I know he's tricking me, and it is a fun stage trick. So on the one hand, I give it to the people who are in deliverance ministries and who enjoy this kind of thing. Yes, it probably is enjoyable. But on the other hand, you have to take a healthy level of skepticism and look at the whole thing and say, yes, part of this is a stage show. Can God do these things? Well, the Bible says that he can. So I'm not to discredit God for it. But why do they need to use trickery whenever they're doing this? And more to the point, why do they need to use techniques that prey upon the minds of people who don't have critical thinking engaged? And that's the big question that I'm going to ask for this podcast.
Yeah, you know, there's so much there, John. And a lot of times, the people who come from that background of ideology, which, hey, John, we do. And we know very well, you know, even just to kind of talk about it in that way, you know, immediately causes people to turn off and not listen, right? So, you know, there's just ways that you can't even start a conversation with people on this stuff. And, you know, when you look at the deliverance movement, you know, you're right, John. I mean, there's stuff in there which is so obviously false, and people they're more focused on making an excuse for the false, right, than actually doing anything about it. And that's incredibly problematic. I know. Now, in our last episodes, we wrapped up talking about the post-Branham history of the message. And we spent, you know, about 35 episodes talking about the big events in message history from, what, about 1966 up through the 1990s. And today we're shifting gears a little bit. And in my book on message history, you know, the final chapter of Volume 2, I started to look at how the message influenced the groups who created the New Apostolic Reformation. And today we're going to start talking about the groups and the people who will eventually connect the dots between the Latter Rain movement and the New Apostolic Reformation. And it'll take us probably, I think, 4 or 5 episodes maybe to walk through all of that. And this is going to be our first one kind of in that arc. And, you know, as we start this off, I do want to first explain kind of the angle and motivation that for the reason that I'm even doing this, because I know you and I, John, we do have a little bit of a different objective or different areas of interest in this. And I know what I'm focused on, what really interests me the most is I try to help the people leave in the message, you know. And with these other movements that we're going to start talking about today, while I do have a lot of knowledge and awareness of them, my main interest in looking at these movements is to determine whether or not they're safe places to go when you leave the message. That's really my main motivation, even in looking into these things. That's really the primary interest I have in these groups. Are they safe groups? And for me personally, I don't want to have anything to do with any branch of the Latter Rain movement. I mean, that's just kind of where I have landed. I think a whole lot of that is a mess. I think the Latter Rain movement and its doctrines are a cult factory. And I do still want to be a Christian, who follows Jesus and believes the Bible, but a lot of the extra biblical doctrines of the Latter Rain movement, the fakery within the deliverance movement, right, has proven to be so destructive over its long history in harming people. I don't want anything to do with that anymore, John. And so, tracing out the branches of the Latter Rain ideology, for me, it's an exercise in identifying places that are not safe. And that, more than anything else, is really my motivation into looking into the other branches of the Latter Rain movement. And the truth is, John, the Deliverance movement does come straight out of this stuff. And they have several of the core doctrines of the Latter Rain movement in it, which is why they have the fakery, and which is why the dangerous, deadly things happen so often in the Deliverance movement. The Deliverance movement has killed probably tens of thousands of people. I think it'd be very safe to say tens of thousands of people have been killed by the Deliverance movement. Certainly thousands of deaths that can be documented that were caused by the Deliverance movement. Now, did they help some people? Sure. But then they killed thousands of people too, right? I mean, and so you have to balance all that out, right? And so when you talk about the fakery and the other stuff, I just kind of tend to just jump straight into the, they killed people. They killed people. Hobart Freeman killed hundreds of people. You go through the people where these practices, they killed people, Derek Prince, there's people who were killed by Derek Prince's ministry. There are people who were killed by T.L. Osborne's ministry. There are people who were killed by the shepherding movement's ministries. There's people who were killed by the, all of these things led to deaths, right? There are people who died in all of this stuff. And so anyways, it's just, I don't want to go there in part because I A, don't want to kill people, and I B, don't want to be killed myself. So, and that's the kind of stuff that on the crazy end of this that it leads to, and that's just the worst end. There's all kinds of middle of the road bad stuff that happens in between there too. And so, anyways, back then, if you go back in time, I think, John, as we start this off, tracing out the branches of the Latter Rain ideology for me, like I said, it's just really an exercise in identifying the state where it's not safe to go. So when we talk about the New Apostolic Reformation, that is exactly really what it is. It's a branch of the Latter Rain movement that I don't want to go to. And so besides all that too, there is also another reason that I'm reluctant to talk about these groups, John. I know we've went back and forth about whether or not to report on these people lots of times, and I have always been very reluctant to get too deep into it. So another reason, John, that I'm kind of reluctant to talk about these people is it's hard to talk about the lat from the what comes between the Latter Rain and the New Apostolic Reformation without talking about these people, because some of these guys are very key guys who are responsible to spreading these very dangerous ideas, but they have complicated legacies. Some of them, they were in this ideology and then they left this ideology. And they kind of sort of left it anyway. And so it gives them a complicated legacy. And some of them, they pretended to leave, but they didn't really leave, and there's just a complicating factor in, and each of them kind of have some nuance, and it gives them just very complicated legacies. And some of them also, John, have really massive followings. Some of them have followings just as big and bigger than the whole message itself, right? And so when you're dealing with something that big and that complex, I feel the need just to be very careful in how I approach it, because we're dealing with things that for people are, it's their whole world. We know what it's like to come from these backgrounds, John. It's these people's whole world that grew up in this stuff. It's their whole life. It's their whole identity. And so it's just something I feel personally the need to be very careful in dealing with it, because depending on what people do with it, it could be very impactful to their lives. And so anyways, I'm just feel a very strong need to be cautious talking about this stuff. And people I'm talking about are people like John Wimber, people like Derek Prince, people like that. On one hand, they are very guilty in spreading this ideology. They are. But then on the other hand, there's a lot of people who were saved and became genuine Christians because of that. And it makes their legacy something really complicated to talk about. But here in our next few episodes, that's what we're going to tackle, because there's really no way to talk about the events that lead into the birth of the New Apostolic Reformation without talking about them and really the very critical role that they play in it all.
I agree. And you know, people often in the comment feeds will ask me my agenda, or they will mistakenly give me an agenda. They'll say, John has this agenda. And honestly, the agenda that I have, if there were to be one, is simply to document the history, because so many of these groups are erasing their history. And they'll create this wonderful ministry that they're building on top of just complete nonsense and heresy. But then whenever it's exposed that the person or persons responsible for their foundational doctrines turn out to be complete lunatics, they'll just wipe that chapter away from their history. And so I'm just kind of piecing together the history as it goes. But you can really tell the cult mindset whenever somebody just gets up in arms when you publish the accurate factual histories. If they're trying to cover that up, there's a reason why they're trying to cover it up. You mentioned John Wimber. I have to be very cautious because I can't really label his group as a cult. And, you know, his churches, by and large, have reformed quite a bit. But the problem is, some of the key players who are really lifting up and supporting the group, they're guarding that history as though they don't want it out. They want to keep it secret from the members. And I see this as a huge problem, so I'm documenting the history. Some of the figures that we're talking about, and some of the names you've even mentioned, I don't even have any real problem with. It's just that in the chain of events leading to the New Apostolic Reformation, these people played a part. They played a role in some way or another. Some of the things that they did were questionable, and we reference that, we talk about that, but they were used as stepping stones to what came later. And if you look at the mess that happened now, and then understand that we really need to learn from that history, we need to learn from those mistakes so that we can see what's happening today. If I had an agenda, it's to learn from the mistakes. And even in my own work, when I'm documenting this stuff, I make mistakes. So I go back and I correct those mistakes. And if it's a huge mistake, I often publish some sort of a blog post or article explaining the mistake, why I made it, you know, what's the correct information. That's transparency. And the thing that I'm really targeting and advocating for here is transparency. If you erase your mistakes, you can't learn from them, and the people don't really understand. But more than that, because it's in the spiritual realm, it really skews what people perceive as spiritual. So they think this movement is from God because they've erased all the mistakes. God doesn't make any mistakes. But when you start to piece together all of the different things that happened to lead to where we are today, you can clearly see that there's a huge problem. And that, for me, that is the agenda. Just simply publish the history, be transparent about it, let the people learn for themselves, and they can decide if your ministry is good or bad, but they need all the information to make that decision.
I think that's a very very well said, John, and it's a very good way to look at things. And I hope that having said all this before we get started, that our listeners will understand the angle we're coming at, in our next few episodes. Because, at the end of the day, like I said, I'm mainly just looking, what is dangerous? Where should we not go? What should we not involve ourselves in, right? What are the other branches of the latter rain that I want to stay away from? And so if you go back in our podcast series, if you go all the way back to episode 32, John, so that's a long time ago. I bet we recorded that one, probably a year and a half, 2 years ago, episode 32. We did an episode entitled The Fracturing of the Latter Rain. And in that episode, we explained quite a bit about how the Latter Rain movement broke up into different factions starting in the 1950s. And if you want more details about how that breakup happened, you can go back and you can listen to those episodes, in that time period. And the things we discussed starting in episode 32 are really the starting point for what we're going to talk about today. And one of the easiest ways to understand how the Latter Rain movement broke up and produced these competing factions is just to consider the elders at the Sharon Orphanage where the whole thing started. And John, I've tried to make a little diagram for this episode for the show, and I'll give a copy to you. We can put up on the screen maybe for people to look at. But in a nutshell, the Latter Rain movement really, it took off at the Sharon Orphanage. That was the initial epicenter of it. The guys at Sharon Orphanage, they met William Branham in 1947. After they saw what he did, they decided they wanted to go home and do the same thing and be like him. He's the guy who sparked it. And they went home, and by 1948, they have started the Latter Rain Revival, and they believe they are replicating what they saw William Branham doing. And during the first year of that revival, the Sharon Orphanage joined the Independent Assemblies of God. And the Independent Assemblies of God, really from the first and second year of the Latter Rain movement, they became the main central network of the early Latter Rain movement. I think that is very important to point out. And back then, William Branham was the most prominent and the most influential preacher in the Independent Assemblies of God. And he remained that way until his death. And if you'll remember back in our episodes when we talked about when the message really was born and so forth, the years right after William Branham's death, you'll remember that when William Branham died, the majority of the message churches back then actually were Independent Assemblies of God churches, John. You know, Earl Martin's Church, Independent Assemblies of God. You just kind of go down that list. A lot of the early churches back then were Independent Assemblies of God churches. Okay, quite a few of them were. Ed Biskel came from the Independent Assemblies of God, for example. There's all kinds of different ones we could go down that came from Independent Assemblies of God. So the largest number of the early message churches came from Independent Assemblies of God. Well, you fast forward about 5 years after Sharon Orphanage joining Assemblies of God, and the Sharon Orphanage elders started to break up. And two of the elders from Sharon Orphanage were actually from Ern Baxter's church. Ern Baxter, William Branham's right-hand man who had been touring with him those years, two of the people at those original Sharon Orphanage elders were from his church. And Ern Baxter had been visiting Sharon Orphanage quite a bit through those early years. And back right in that time, you'll remember Ern Baxter and William Branham had a falling out. And when Ern Baxter and William Branham fell out, at that same time, Ern Baxter convinced one of the elders at Sharon Orphanage, his name was Jim Watt, convinced him to break away and go work with him. And when he broke away and they started working together, they moved out to the West Coast. Ern Baxter's church was in Vancouver. This man moved to Seattle and pastored a church in Seattle, Jim Watt. They started working together, and what they formed, John, was the nucleus that was gradually going to grow into the shepherding movement, right? So when Jim Watts came out to Seattle, he took over pastorship of the Broadway Tabernacle, which was also an Independent Assemblies of God church. And while he was there at that church, at the Independent Assemblies of God, Broadway Tabernacle in Seattle, Derek Prince comes back from Africa. He'd been a missionary in Africa, and he comes to Seattle, and he becomes pastor in that same church with Jim Watt. So he's pastoring a church alongside one of the original elders of the Sharon Orphanage, okay? At the same time, they're working with Derek Prince. And as this happens, John, they begin to pioneer what's going to turn into the shepherding movement. And the shepherding movement was based around the fivefold ministry beliefs that George Houghton had been pushing from Sharon Orphanage. And really, the whole basis of the shepherding movement was really about coming up with a workable way to implement the fivefold ministry, which the truth is, you know, that's the same thing was happening in the message in those years and quite a few other Latter Rain groups back in that same time frame. You know, one way to think about the different branches of the Latter Rain movement is you can think each branch of the Latter Rain movement is a competing group of a fivefold tier. It's different. It's competing fivefold ministry structures is what it is. As the schisms happened and the upper tiers split, they take off subordinate structures with them, and you end up with these schismed, independent fivefold ministry structures in a hierarchy, all pointing up, you know, to central apostles in each of these groups. And that's what each branch of the Latter Rain movement is. That it is just a breakaway group of the original fivefold structure that got established at the very beginning of the Latter Rain movement, and each branch is basically a competing fivefold ministry structure, John. I mean, that's what it is. And each branch had a little different formulation on what the manifested sons of God was. In a lot of the cases, it was their different takes on manifested sons of God that even led to a lot of the schisms, right? And as those schisms happened, each branch tended to set up their own different top apostles and top prophets, and then their own independent, subordinate, fivefold ministry networks. And that was happening in the Sharon orphanage, or rather in the shepherding movement from very early on. That's what Ern Baxter and Jim Watt did when they left out of Sharon orphanage, John. They started setting up their new independent fivefold ministry structure, breaking away in their branch of the latter rain. And Derek Prince is one of the very first ministers who joined in that structure with them. Okay? And the shepherding movement became very, very big, very popular, and they did just a really big fivefold ministry network all over the United States, Canada, and to a lesser degree in the United Kingdom and Australia. And so that's what it was. And at the top of their structure was Ern Baxter. Again, Ern Baxter had been a close co-worker with William Branham, and Derek Prince had worked also with William Branham a number of times, too. Derek Prince, did direct meetings with William Branham. They're on tape together, sharing the stage together, Ern Baxter and Derek Prince. And Derek Prince also, was involved in that. So then you also had a man named Don Basham and Bob Mumford. And those two men actually played a key role in recruiting a bunch of people from the Jesus movement. Okay, we'll probably talk about them more in our next episode. And then last of all was a man named Charles Simpson. And so those are the guys, John, who are the top of the fivefold ministry structure of the shepherding movement.
One thing that you said in there, I want to reemphasize it because I don't think enough people get it. Whenever religious historians look at all of this mess, they often fail to connect all of the dots and understand what caused this mess. How did it evolve into this? Because they look doctrinally at each individual group, and then when they're comparing the history behind it, when the doctrine is so significantly different, they'll say, well, this wasn't a stepping stone for this ministry. These are two different things. But what they're failing to understand is exactly what you said. This is a competition, not a collaboration. And all of these ministries, for example, so Mike Bickle was working with Paul Kane, who was Branham's protege. Mike Bickle has this one sect in the NAR. And in today's world, people can clearly understand that when you examine Bill Johnson, there are some similarities, but Bill Johnson is not Mike Bickle. They're two different theologies. However, they do sometimes share the platform together. There are some videos of this. So there is a collaboration, but yet also a competition, because Mike Bickle is, he trained his group to believe that he was the end of days prophet, that was the leadership. It was a competition. The interesting part of this competition, it would be interesting to look at the mindsets of these people, because while competing and saying that they are the elite chosen one, and in essence, they're saying the other ones who say that they are not the elite chosen ones. They're, while competing and collaborating, they don't really like each other that much. That's the funny part about all of this. When you go back into this history and you understand that the Latter Rain movement was much the same, you had all of these different competing people, each trying to say that their ministry was the next thing closest to God, while implying or suggesting that the other ones weren't. So where you end up with is, it took me years to understand that, and I would have people who were from prominent Latter Rain circles saying, no, William Branham was not a part of this at all. And they would go back through their history, and they would talk about the doctrine, how it was significantly different, how Branham abandoned it. Everything they said was true. But what they failed to understand, people like you mentioned, A.W. Rasmussen, leader of the Independent Assemblies of God, big-time Latter Rain guy, he was working closely with William Branham, and Branham called him, I think the word was, bosom friend. And same with Joseph Mazzanbose. This was another key figure in Latter Rain. If not for those two, I doubt Latter Rain would have spread as fast and as quickly as it did. So these are key figures, but you had other figures in Latter Rain that was completely separate and disconnected from Branham. And you have to understand that all these ministries are competing, And it isn't the doctrinal foundations that enable it. It is the key components of a cult that bind all of this together. You talked about the fivefold ministry. That's one thing that's shared because, hey, what better method could you have to take full control of your people as to say that there's this hierarchical tier where I'm at the top and you people who are in the rank and file members sitting in the congregation, you're at the very bottom. You're nothing to me. I am the elite. I'm the spiritual elite. That was the mindset of these guys. And when they had their competitions, what happened is it seemed to flesh out all of the narcissists that were in the group, because the narcissists are the ones that would rise to the top. They have the perfect structure to enable a narcissist to take over. And that, for that reason, many of them turned into a cult. So you have to look at the structure and the foundation. And also significant, everything that you said, I'm thinking we could talk entire podcasts off of, but when you really begin to understand that Derek Prince was working so closely with key figures directly from the Sharon Orphanage in the heat of Latter Rain, in a movement that William Branham was one of two catalysts that created, there is a strong connection there. And we'll get into it later, but Derek Prince, along with many others, they would say that they later denounced Branham because he went astray. Arne Baxter did the same thing. The problem is the way in which they do it, because they can't disavow everything that they built from Branham's foundation to create their ministries. So we've got an article, and maybe I'll throw it up on the screen, where Arne Baxter is talking about Branham, and he's saying things like, the fruits of his ministry are not good. He went astray. They all say this. He went astray. But then he'll go back and he'll talk about the power of God that worked on the stage with Branham during his ministry, because that same foundation was used to create his own ministry and several hundreds, countless others. But Arne Baxter was one of the people who was on the stage when he witnessed Branham lying through his teeth about the power of his ministry and the deliverance that he had. So we have, if you go back through our series of podcasts, you can go back and you can see examples where Arne Baxter was there. William Branham was lying about somebody being healed. In fact, some of the people died who Branham said, I healed them of this disease, and they died of the very thing that he healed them from. Arne Baxter was there. So he knew he was lying, but he can't disavow that because his entire platform that is making him millions of dollars, I don't know how rich the guy was, if you disavow that, you also disavow your ministry. And if you disavow your ministry, you disavow your income. Have you ever wondered how the Pentecostal movement started, or how the progression of modern Pentecostalism transitioned through the Latter Rain, Charismatic, and other fringe movements into the New Apostolic Reformation? You can learn this and more on William Branham Historical Research's website, william-branham.org. On the books page of the website, you can find the compiled research of John Collins, Charles Paisley, Stephen Montgomery, John McKinnon, and others, with links to the paper, audio, and digital versions of each book. You can also find resources and documentation on various people and topics related to those movements. If you want to contribute to the cause, you can support the podcast by clicking the Contribute button at the top. And as always, be sure to like and subscribe to the audio or video version that you're listening to or watching. On behalf of William Branham Historical Research, we want to thank you for your support.
I do have a slight difference, you know, in the origins of this, because I don't personally think that William Branham created this ideology. I think he popularized it, but I don't view him as the creator of the ideology, but he definitely popularized it, and he introduced a lot of these people to it. And you're correct, though, but William Branham and the message is absolutely critical to these people. You take Derek Prince. Okay, so Derek Prince, I'm going to talk about him quite a bit here. He was a minister who came from the United Kingdom. He went to, I guess, Eton College, which is like the most famous. It's where all the kings and queens and royalty and Prince William and King Charles and all, that's where they all went to college, John. That's where Derek Prince went to college, like the it school of the United Kingdom. And you just come out of there and you naturally, you just by default become important and famous, right? I mean, this just seems how it is from what I understand over there. It's kind of like Harvard times 10 in America, right? He went to Eton College and he ended up coming out of there and became a Church of God mission, or rather a Church of England missionary working in East Africa, like in Kenya. And in Kenya is where it seems like that he came into contact with the Latter Rain movement at first, because at the same time that he was in Kenya, the Independent Assemblies of God was also doing a big mission outreach in Kenya at that same time in the early 50s. In fact, they had, if you go back and you look, the British government had invited them in, and they were doing revivals in the Mau Mau concentration camps to convert the Mau Mau rebels to Latter Rain Christianity, John. I mean, that's what's going on, honestly. And so somehow through that, Derek Prince seems to have come in contact with the Latter Rain guys. Well, he comes back to the United States, and he gets pastorship first of Broadway Tabernacle in Seattle. What was that? That was an Independent Assemblies of God church, right? So clearly he's coming into Independent Assemblies of God. And you're right. I think a lot of people misdiagnose this thing. The Independent Assemblies of God in the 50s was the largest main branch of the Latter Rain movement. And it remained that way into the 60s. The mainstream of the Latter Rain movement was the Independent Assemblies of God. And Sharon Orphanage was inside a member of Independent Assemblies of God. I mean, it. And so was all the early, most of the early message churches, okay? So that's what you look at. And Derek Prince comes into Independent Assemblies of God. He becomes pastor of Broadway Tabernacle, starts working with Ern Baxter and Jim Watt, elder from Sharon Orphanage. And yeah, he gets introduced to the Full Gospel Businessmen and starts getting invited to talk at the Full Gospel Businessmen conferences. And I've heard people say, oh, see, he's just a Full Gospel Businessman guy. That don't have nothing to do with the message. No, you silly people. The Full Gospel Businessmen was a third of their board was the message cult. The message was a dominant faction of the Full Gospel Businessmen. So, I mean, from Derek Prince is coming into this ideology. He is being popularized by this ideology. He's been given a church by this ideology. He's being invited by this ideology to preach at its conventions. Okay. Derek Prince comes in and he is in this. And from early on, John, Derek Prince he adopts the core concepts of Latter Rain. He's teaching Last Day Revival. He's teaching his version of Manifested Sons of God. He's preaching fivefold ministry. And here's the thing where I think we're, again, if you have only ever been in this ideology, you think, well, fivefold ministry is normal. It's from other places. No. Fivefold ministry only comes from this ideology. Fivefold ministry does not exist outside of the Latter Rain movement and its branches. This is where it comes from, okay? And a lot of the things that Derek Prince taught came directly from this ideology, and he taught a lot of it for his entire life. And you know, when you get to the end of his life, Derek Prince, he died, I think, in 2004. In 1997, roughly, Derek Prince repudiated some of this stuff, John. He kind of repudiated it and said it wasn't, you know, it was a mistake. The shepherding movement was a mistake. You know, the Latter Rain movement, he kind of rejected the Latter Rain movement. And so these are the sort of things that give people like Derek Prince a complicated legacy. Okay, so for all but the last 7 years of his life, six, seven years of his life, he taught this ideology. And then the last 6, 7 years of his life, most of which he's too old and sick to actually preach or do anything anymore, he suddenly doesn't believe in this anymore. Now, John, would you call that, and people like that, I feel like, this is a guilty conscience biting these people when they're on their deathbeds, because they knew all along, right? And there's a number of them. They get on their deathbed, and in the last year, the last point of their life, when they're terminally ill or what have you, they recant all this stuff and you know, apologize for it. Derek Prince is one of the guys who did that. And, you know, people can have these deathbed conversions and all that. I think that's good, right? And God bless Derek Prince, you know, if he got rid of all of this. But when I talk about these earlier phases of Derek Prince's ministry, when all these problematic things were happening, I feel like, based on what I understand and have read, I'm not saying anything Derek Prince didn't say himself. Like, he also said it was all bad. And so what's going to happen, like, you're going to look in the comments of this and our future episodes, and you're going to find people saying, oh no, Derek Prince is wonderful. Don't tell me he's wonderful like that. Derek Prince himself said this was bad, right? And if you disagree with the things I'm going to, continue to go on and say, I would encourage you to actually listen to Derek Prince himself when he said all this stuff was bad, okay? So, like, you either respect Derek Prince and believe him when he said this was bad, or you don't, and you stay in the ideology that Derek Prince rejected at the end of his life. So, anyways, these guys have complicated legacies. And so Derek Prince, like I mentioned, he came from Eton College. He missioned in Kenya. He came to the United States. He took pastorship in an IOAG church in Seattle. He started working with elders of the Sharon Orphanage. He started working directly with William Branham, doing full gospel businessmen conventions. And during the last years of William Branham's death, or the years around that death, and as things broke up, Derek Prince ended up in the branch of this ideology that produced the shepherding movement. And in practice, what they did is they set up a competing fivefold ministry structure to the message, right? They rejected the apostles of the message, John. Right, like the message had its own apostles and prophets. They rejected that. They also rejected the apostles and prophets at the Sharon Orphanage branch, and they set up their own independent branch. And they had claim back to the very original through Jim Watt. Okay, they could claim to be descended from the original branch through Jim Watt, and that's what they did at the very first. And so, like the early Latter Rain movement, the shepherding movement, they emphasized very deeply the concept of submission to the fivefold ministry as a requirement for perfection, or what they called it, maturity in their system. And in that system, the individuals have to submit to a spiritual authority figure for guidance and accountability, and really just guiding their lives. And in practice, what a lot of the people do who follow this fivefold ministry structure is they actually give the role of the Holy Spirit to the preachers, and the preachers usurp the role of the Holy Spirit. That's really, if in a in a In a biblical sense, what's happening, that where it goes wrong here. The preachers take over the role of guiding people's lives rather than connecting them into personal walks with God, right? And so that's what they're doing. And after Derek Prince left Broadway Tabernacle, that church got taken over by Raymond Hawes, and it became the flagship church of the Assembly of the Body of Christ, which was one of the subunits of the shepherding movement. And they all got really radical, did a lot of crazy stuff there in the 1970s. They were still getting arrested for raping kids up into the early 2020s, in that branch of the movement. And you never hear anybody talk about that stuff, but that really is true. That's what happened. And so over time, the center of that movement, it moves from the Pacific Northwest and it shifts into the American South. And that's when you see Earn Baxter and Derek Prince and all these guys end up kind of relocating into the American South, and they get the name the Fort Lauderdale Five. And there's just a lot of really bad problems happening in this movement as time goes on. Over time, they're getting more radical. More radical. There's more abuse. There's more abuse. There's more abuse, and it's starting to draw attention from outsiders that there's bad things happening inside the shepherding movement.
And that's exactly the point that I was driving at earlier. There are some very, very, very bad things that are in the structure and makeup of these groups, in the foundational elements of their ministries. And I agree with you. Whenever William Branham was working with many of these guys, I agree that it wasn't Branham that came up with many of these doctrines. However, the way that they interacted with Branham was in such a way where he was well acknowledged as the leader of the revival. So he spoke with an authority to the members, including Derek Prince. If Derek Prince is working with these Latter Rain guys, I have to believe, based off of everything that I fully understand about their ministry, when you have two catalysts that make up your entire doctrinal foundation, William Branham and Franklin Hall, I have to believe that Derek Prince at one point in time viewed William Branham as an authority. So whatever Branham said, it stuck, even though Branham largely plagiarized other people. But then, like you said, you get into, now we're entering into the charismatic days, and William Branham's dead, the shepherding movement is forming. So many figures that emerged into today's New Apostolic Reformation or its direct influencing history was, you can't say that they were all in the shepherding movement, but there was such a heavy, heavy collaboration. John Wimber, I think I've published it, and I'll throw a cover of the article on the video version of this podcast, but John Wimber is working directly with these guys, and he's saying the militant language that's coming out of the shepherding movement in his speeches that are in the articles that are published by magazines like New Wine, which is a shepherding movement publication. He's using the same militant terms, the same, in a cult you would call it the loaded language. People like John Wimber are using the loaded language, which shows a deeper connection of influence than simply, here are two ministries and they decided to hold an event together. It's deeper than that. When the loaded language is the same, there is a shared platform. There is a shared foundation for these guys. And yes, John Wimber later denied it. He renounced it. But there's a period of time whenever he's working with them and he didn't denounce it. And, you know, Charles, if you were to suddenly discover that I robbed a bank and said, John's a bad guy, he robbed a bank, I disavowed John Collins, that's fine. But if you were with me and helping me rob that bank, you're still problematic, right? You're still guilty because you helped rob the bank. Well, all of these guys are working together. They're creating what became this mess of New Apostolic Reformation. They're all the bank robbers.
You are correct. You were correct there with Derek Prince. You know, William Branham was definitely the leader of this movement, and leader in the sense that he was the most influential and people took their cue from him. Derek Prince could not have become popular in this movement without William Branham's blessing. Not possible. He could not have got invited to speak alongside William Branham as the keynote speaker without William Branham's blessing, right? That's just not how this movement works. Derek Prince had to get William Branham's blessing in order to share the stage with him. And it was sharing the stage with him. It was Derek Prince sharing the stage with William Branham that made him popular in this ideology. I mean, that's just the reality of the situation. And so Derek Prince, you know, he I'll tell you another thing too about Derek Prince before we go just a little further. Derek Prince said, this was before he recanted. And all along, this Derek Prince is doing this weird sort of stuff. This is before Derek Prince recanted all the Latter Rain stuff. Derek Prince said that William Branham had an evil spirit in him, John. He said that when they worked together, he discerned that William Branham had an evil spirit in him when they worked together. Kind of like Kenneth Hagin and some of these other guys did. And so right there, you just take that right there all by itself. Derek Prince knew William Branham had an evil spirit. Yet he worked with him and didn't tell anybody that he knew he had an evil spirit. So right there, we can say Derek Prince, by his own admission, is a man of bad character, right? He knowingly worked with people he knew was evil, right? Right? I mean, by his own admission. And when you're in this ideology, right, you're like, oh, wow, Derek Prince had the gift of discernment and he knew this thing in advance. And you don't carry it out to, no. Okay, he knew about it in advance. Therefore, that makes him a bad person for continuing to go along with it, right? Like, that's the next logical step for this stuff, right? Same with Kenneth Hagin. Same with all these people, right? Now, here's the thing. I don't believe for a minute that Derek Prince ever believes that had a discernment that William Branham had a, you know, evil spirit. That's something he had to come up with later years when the bad stuff about William Branham started to come out. He needed some way to excuse his behavior. And he said, oh, Gordon Lindsay and Kenneth Hagin, they made up these prophecies that they had before. I'm going to do that too. I'm going to make up that I knew William Branham was a bad guy all along, right? And Derek Prince, that's probably honestly what Derek Prince did. And I have such a low opinion, John, of people who did that stuff. If they knew it was bad back then, if they really had a spiritual discernment that something was bad back then, and they didn't do anything about it, John, while me and you and our family was trapped in that doomsday cult, what does that say about them? It says something really bad about them. It really says something very bad about them. It says something very bad about Derek Prince. I'm glad he changed his mind at the end of his life, ladies and gentlemen. I really am. But it says something really bad about him that he knew things were wrong and he didn't do anything about it, by his own admission. Okay? So the shepherding movement, John, as it got going, it produced a magazine called New Wine Magazine. And as you come up to, you know, the 60s, they start publishing that, and it becomes an important periodical message or a magazine of the early charismatic movement. You know, Derek Prince, Joseph Mazzanbose, a lot of people like that were publishing in that magazine, right? They were still closely affiliated with Independent Assemblies of God. Joseph Mazzanbose, the superintendent of Independent Assemblies of God, was one of the main contributors to that magazine, John, in its very early days. And here's the thing. There was still connections to Christian identity happening in that time, which I know we've pointed out before. Eldon Purvis was another contributor to the early days of the New Wine magazine. Who is Eldon Purvis? He was a homosexual Nazi in the Christian identity movement, publishing articles in New Wine magazine. Okay? I mean, there were the cross section was there. And we also know, you know, through eyewitness testimony that serpent seed teaching was being taught at Derek Prince's Broadway Tabernacle while he was there. Not by Derek Prince, but by other preachers. So, you know, they were not very far away from this, from the radical fringe of this ideology, you know, from the early days when Derek Prince first joined still. But anyways, that happened. And as I mentioned already, the center of the shepherding movement kind of moved to the American South. They set up shop in Fort Lauderdale, the Fort Lauderdale Five. Ern Baxter actually ended up pastoring a church in Mobile, Alabama before it was all said and done, John. I don't know if I've told you this. I have been to Ern Baxter's Mobile church, John. I have back. It's probably been close to 30 years ago. I have actually went to that church in Mobile where Ern Baxter was. There's a message church very close to that, and we all went over to spy on Ern Baxter one service. Oh boy, John, being in the message is a hoot, isn't it? So we had went over, some people took me over there to spy on Ern Baxter one service while I was in Alabama. Yeah. And so I actually got to see Ern Baxter church and Ern Baxter preach. And you know, when I was there, John, they're very similar to my branch of the message. I gotta say, I didn't observe a whole lot of difference from my branch of the message to what was going on there in that church. But the shepherding movement was large. It had an estimated 750 churches with maybe 150,000 members, primarily in North America, you know, during the 70s. And Derek Prince, and the reason I'm kind of focusing on Derek Prince here is because he was the most prominent, influential preacher in the shepherding movement. He, more than any of the rest of them, took those ideas to the masses. He is more responsible for taking those ideas to the masses in the early days of the ideology of shepherding movement than anybody else. And he had the largest audience because he was a televangelist, John. He was one of the men who got one of the slots on the CBN network from Pat Robertson when CBN launched, which happened, you know, just the year or two after William Branham died. And so he is really, really taking that ideology far and wide in the years after, really right after William Branham died and up into the 70s. And scandals and reports of abuse and cult-like behavior in the shepherding movement ended up kind of being an embarrassment to Pat Robertson because, you know, he's on TV. And Pat Robertson's worried that the shepherding movement is starting to make the rest of the broader Latter Rain movement look bad, right? He's worried, oh, it's going to make us look bad, because the people started acting like a cult pretty early on. And the way it started out was, Pat Robertson encountered some shepherding movement followers somewhere at a conference, and he observed, these people are acting really strange. Even for the Latter Rain branches, these guys are acting very strange, you know, and doing weird stuff and submitting themselves in weird ways to their leaders. And so Pat Robertson's actually the guy who starts to try and confront the shepherding movement to get them to stop. And he initially, I think it's the year 1975, he publishes an open letter to the shepherding movement and to the other factions of the Latter Rain movement, and basically denounces the shepherding movement. But that doesn't actually work in order to get him to shut down. And Derek Prince is actually the main guy who leads the charge to defend the shepherding movement to Pat Robertson. And you can find Derek Prince's letters on all this are out. And through all that, he's like whole hog defending fivefold ministry, defending all of these things that, Pat Robertson had attacked in his open letter. And what ended up happening is Pat Robertson started tightening the screws on Derek Prince. He threatened to get Derek Prince blackballed from CBN. Hey, Derek Prince, I'm going to cut you off from your audience if you don't listen to me. Right? This is what Pat Robertson literally is doing. And finally, Derek Prince leaves the shepherding movement. He does that in 1980. And here's the thing. When Derek Prince left the shepherding movement in 1980, he never made a public announcement. He never recanted the beliefs. He never said anything about the abuses going on. He just basically silently left and said, hey, guys, I'm moving on to a new phase of my ministry. And he didn't disavow it. He just quietly exited. And Pat Robertson let him keep being on TV, you know? And I think really, if you look at it, I think it's safe to say Derek Prince left the shepherding movement not because he had a genuine problem with its teachings or beliefs or practices. He left it because he didn't want to lose his televangelism slots on TV. That is really, I think, why he left the shepherding movement. And so the shepherding movement continued on without Derek Prince. But as you come up into the late 70s and the early and mid 80s, the abuses happening in the shepherding movements, you know, are getting more and more light put on them. And finally, Bob Mumford and Don Basham start to back away from the movement too and admit, yeah, there's abuses going on here, and we repent, we recant of the shepherding movement, and they leave. Well, Derek Prince had already left a few years earlier, John, and he more or less gets out scot-free. But Don Basham and those guys, they're the ones who end up taking the fall, you know, several years later when it finally comes to light, all the stuff that, you know, had been going on. And they apologize for it and move on. Now, who never apologized? Ern Baxter. Ern Baxter never repented or recanted this thing once. No, he took it to the end of his life. But all the other guys left. And Derek Prince, he never recanted the shepherding movement and stuff publicly until, like I said, about 1997. Just a few years before he died. And even though he left the shepherding movement, he continued to preach fivefold ministry. He continued to preach all, you know, the key distinctives of latter rain all the way up to the last years of his life on the outside of it. And a lot of people will, I think this is what makes Derek Prince particularly dangerous, is that a lot of people will say, oh, well, he left the shepherding movement, he's not dangerous. Oh, he recanted this stuff in 1997, he's not dangerous. But he is. He is. And he is because those teachings pervade his entire ministry. They're all across his ministry. And they're in the whole thing. He's teaching all of the key distinctives of latter rain all the way through, John. And he's teaching them, and people are accepting them. And he's just a massively responsible person for spreading this ideology. He's one of the most important and guilty people for having spread this ideology through his life.
So Derek Prince, you know, deathbed confession, whatever you call it, John Wimber, deathbed confession, whatever you want to call it, that's fine. I have no issues with these people for doing that. And they should do this. If they realize, hey, everything that I have preached and taught and did was incorrect because my foundation was incorrect, I have no issue with that whatsoever. But the people that come after this to hide that from your members in what is developing, in maybe it's not destructive cult yet, but when you start covering up your history, that's the makings of a destructive cult. You're covering up your past. In Dr. Stephen Hassan's BITE model, this is the control of information, the I in the BITE model. So you can't do this. You can't cover up that past. But what is happening today is, because these foundations, these false foundations were laid, people want to cover it up because, quite frankly, like you just said, there are ministries that would topple because of this.
So Derek Prince, throughout his life, John, he taught fivefold ministry. He continued to promote that base, the same base authoritarian model that was the whole foundation of the shepherding movement. He taught that for his entire life, really. His entire ministry, he taught that from the early days of joining Latter Rain. In addition to that, Derek Prince is probably actually most famous, even though the fivefold ministry stuff was embedded all across it. He's most famous for his deliverance teachings, right? Like, that really is the thing that most people think of him for, is his deliverance stuff. And John, if you look at Derek Prince's deliverance teachings, they are incredibly problematic. I mean, they are just about the worst flavor of the deliverance positive confession teachings that came out of that ideology. They're really bad stuff. He taught basically that literally anything that's wrong with you is pretty well demonic possession. And he taught that children are basically incapable of resisting demonic impression, and that I think in one quote he says 90% of the things wrong with kids are demonic possession. And everything, a lot of the stuff he comes back to is it's always demonic possession. And he would instruct people on how to deal with demonic possession in their children, which usually resulted around strong discipline. You know, use your imagination, ladies and gentlemen, how you get a demon out of your kid. Like he's you know, talking about all that stuff. John, he even taught that your babies would be born demon possessed if you were bitter while you were pregnant, right? Like he taught basically even that babies were could be born demon possessed. I mean, and he the stuff he did was really, really out there stuff that he taught. You know, he wasn't just preaching simple, you know, believe on Jesus, be healed. Yes, you can be healed if you have faith. He wasn't teaching this stuff. I mean, he was really teaching a lot of really ugly, horrendous stuff for a lot of his life and his deliverance practices. The exact same kind of stuff you see in these deliverance manuals where bitterness causes arthritis and diabetes is caused by a spirit of, you know, feeling rejected. You know, all of this weird stuff. That's the kind of stuff Derek Prince was teaching. And you know, it harmed a lot of people. You know, he wasn't to Hobart Freeman levels where, you know, hundreds of people are dying left and right. But yeah, I mean, a lot of people were very badly harmed, and his teachings are just tainted end to end with this stuff. And you know, like I said, when he got towards the end of his life, and you'll hear people say this, that he repented, he recanted from these beliefs. But I'll ask all our listeners this too. Can any of you actually find the recorded testimony or the written testimony where he rejected these beliefs? Can you actually find it? Because John, I would tell you what, I have looked and I have looked and I have looked and I have looked, and I can find, John, I can find sources referencing it, okay, without footnotes, that are apparently quoting him, but I cannot find his actual written recorded statement rejecting these beliefs, John. I cannot find that. Now, did he? I'm going to take everyone's word for it that he did. I can't find it. I can't find it anywhere. But I believe he did it. And I believe I can't find it anywhere is because people don't want us to find it if it does exist. And here's the other thing too. If he repented from these beliefs and he didn't repent from them as loudly as he endorsed them in his life, did he really repent of them? Did he? I don't know. Maybe he didn't. So I'm right on the fence of whether he did or not. I know I'm making a pretty strong judgment here on Derek Prince, and I feel like you just got to, you know, you've got to just kind of be honest and make a pretty strong judgment here. I can't find that he ever repented of it really. And even if he did, his ministry still has all these things published on his website today. All the core doctrines of the Latter Rain ministry, the Latter Rain teachings are published on Derek Prince Ministries' website today. They still are. And so if he did recant of these beliefs, whoever, you know, publishes all his ministry stuff today is pretty deceptive in having not retracted all of the stuff that he taught on this subject, right? And so Derek Prince, very, very problematic preacher, and never really took responsibility for all of the harm and the abuse. And in his life, I mean, be clear, Derek Prince was involved in at least five cults, two of which he personally helped launch, and most of which had pretty horrendous sexual abuse of minors, torturous things happened, deaths, all kinds of stuff that happened, you know, among the fallouts of his group, and that he was in. And so for me, John, I know I am going to get probably massacred for this episode, John. I don't want anything to do with Derek Prince. I don't want anything to do with his teachings. I hope he really did repent at the end of his life. You know, I really hope he did, but he's not a safe, authoritative source we can trust or look to, nor are any of the people that he influenced and carry on the variations of his teachings. I don't want anything to do with that.
And the funny part is, I've had people say that this group's not a cult or this other group's not a cult. In a normal Christian circle, if somebody did something, said something, taught something that you disagreed with, you would acknowledge him. You would acknowledge, yeah, the man's a Christian. I disagree with this, that, or the other. But you'd just move on. You wouldn't care whether or not, especially if they're dead, you wouldn't like continue saying we really respect this dead guy. In a normal Christian circle, you don't do this. But the problem is, and again, I can't label everybody who follows Derek Prince even as a cult. I can't say that they're a destructive cult, I should say. There is a cult following of Derek Prince, apparently, but I can't say that they're a destructive cult. But if you're a normal Christian, aren't you a follower of Jesus? Don't you acknowledge, well, Jesus taught the things that I really, really hold my Christian values to? You don't go back to some dead human guy. And that's where this gets really interesting and weird. The dead human guys seem to have elevated themselves to a level and status that is far above any preacher. The pastor at my church, if he were to die, and then years later, I'm telling people, well, we had this really good pastor at my church, and I follow his teachings. They're going to look at me like I'm a freak, man. But the interesting part is, in this movement, you don't think that way. You're so beholden to the doctrines that are taught by certain individuals that you have to take a step back and say, what's wrong here? There's something wrong. What is it?
As we wrap up here today, John, we've had to talk about the shepherding movement because of what comes next. Because Derek Prince and these leaders of the shepherding movement, they are going to influence the group that we're about to talk about in our next episode. And they're going to be taking their version of latter rain move ideas and injecting it with certain people that we're going to mention in the next episode. Next episode, we're going to talk about Lonnie Frisbee. Next episode, we're going to talk about John Wimber. We're going to talk about the Jesus People movement. And they are infiltrating that movement early on and injecting these ideas with certain people. And they actually had direct confrontations, like with Chuck Smith, John. I mean, Chuck Smith said Derek Prince was a false prophet. That's part of why he threw out Lonnie Frisbee. You know, we're going to talk through these things, okay? And it's important to understand where these people come from, so we can show you how this ideology iterates and moves into its next phase.
Awesome. Well, I look forward to going there. If you've enjoyed our show and you want more information, you can check us out on the web. You can find us at william-branham.org and christiangospelchurch.org. For more about the history of William Branham and the healing revivals, you can read Come Out of Her, My People. And for more about the dark side of the New Apostolic Reformation, you can read Weaponized Religion, From Christian Identity to the NAR. Available on Amazon, Kindle, and Audible.